afternoon, I want to look a little more at the aspect of mindfulness. I think it's very important that in order to concentrate, in order to look deeply, we will need mindfulness, we will need awareness, and at the same time, by cultivating those two capacities we have, then we're also going to develop more mindfulness. But first, I'd like to read just two quotes about what the Buddha said about mindfulness. So the first one, about right mindfulness, is one of the Eightfold Paths. And that's the way the Buddha defines it. And what monks is right mindfulness? Here monks, a monk abides, contemplating body as body, ardent, clearly aware, and mindful. Having put aside hankering and fretting for the world, he abides contemplating feelings as feeling. He abides contemplating mind as mind. He abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects. Ardent, clearly aware, and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world, this is called right mindfulness. So basically, the mindfulness is, if anybody is called, you can close some of these windows, possibly. Or if you're okay, that's fine too. Just be aware, anybody can move during the talk. So, the thing is that, in a way, it is not just, in a way, mindfulness of the body, or mindfulness of the breath. Actually, the Buddha sees it as we're aware of mindfulness of the body, we're aware of mindfulness of the feeling, we're aware of mindfulness in terms of the mind, and we also are mindful of mind objects, which can be anything and everything. I mean, there are different lists. So it's basically saying to try to be as mindful as we can in whatever circumstances we are in. But what is also important is to see that mindfulness is also accompanied by a certain peaceful state of mind. Because he points out, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. So that actually, because awareness, we are conscious, but it's kind of a type of mindfulness which, with it, there is this, I would say, spaciousness, there is this openness, there is this kind of, I would say, nearly calmness, some kind of restfulness. The mind is not agitated. The mind is not confused. Then I just wanted to read another quote. And this is, in a way, the Buddha talking about his mindfulness. And so that's what he said. Here, Ananda, for the Tathagata, meaning himself, feelings are known as they arise, are they present, as they disappear. Perceptions are known as they arise, as they are present, as they disappear. Thoughts are known as they arise, and they are present, and they disappear. So we're not just mindful of whatever is going on, we're also mindful of the arising and the passing away, that it be of feelings, of perception, of thought. So that, I think it's kind of not just being conscious of something, but it's conscious of something in a certain way. And so, in a way, the term that is generally translated as mindfulness from the early scripture is sati, S-A-T-I. And sati actually can have many different meanings. One of the meanings actually is recollection, that one of the aspects of mindfulness, of this awareness we're trying to develop, is that we remember. And I would say, in a way, each time you come back to the breath, to the sensation, to the sound, each time you remember. So each time, mindfulness is activated. So again, it's back to this, I cultivate something, and something also is developed. So there is this recollection, it's an important aspect of sati, mindfulness. But in a way, we could see sati, this mindfulness, this meditative mindfulness, in two different ways, two different aspects. One is of simple awareness. And I think nowadays, this is very much the way it is described, that it is kind of like just a certain presence of mind. So we are aware of, but what is it we are aware of with this mindfulness? We're generally aware of what is going on now. So there is this idea of this present of mind to our experience. And so you're present to what is happening inside or outside. And in that awareness, there is this idea of non-judgmental observation. And I think this is something we have to be very careful about. When we cultivate awareness, we cultivate mindfulness, that this, putting a kind of a certain emphasis on awareness and mindfulness, does not then, I would say, piggyback on what I would call the critical mind. So that then not only are you aware, but it's an awareness which kind of like is ready to jump on anything. It's kind of nearly like you have a policeman or a policewoman on your shoulder, kind of, again, back to this scanning. You are scanning, but with a little kind of, you know, what's the problem, scanning. Not, when what I was trying to point out this morning is that it's not, we're not cultivating this awareness so that we can scan better the bad thing I do or anybody else do, but more that it helps us to penetrate more fully in the experience, inside and outside, that is going on. And so I think this is something we have to be really careful about. And I think that's why John Kabat-Zinn, with Mindfulness Movement, put a lot of emphasis on this non-judgmental awareness to counteract that tendency. Because often what happens is that you start to be in the awareness, make you do what I call double guessing. So you kind of, you know, you're aware, and then you're watching the awareness itself, and then you're kind of checking too, the checking comes in, you know, am I doing this right, am I doing this wrong, and you know, is this, and then you kind of get very complicated, you know, because then you think, how should I be aware, and how much should I be aware of? Because the problem is that there is only so much we can be aware of at any given time. So I think we have to be careful not to take it too literally, that with this mindfulness, I am going to be like kind of a magician, kind of being aware to the same degree of everything at once. I think we have to see that this is a tool. This is a tool in a way to help us to develop more wisdom and compassion, not to be kind of checking more on ourselves, you know, am I doing this right? You know, is this working? Or, and then you kind of like get into this, what I would call tension. You know, it's kind of, it's not what I would call the mindfulness we're trying to develop. So I think to be careful there. Then there is another aspect of awareness that sometimes, somebody was recently, I read about it, they suggested we could call it protective awareness. So that the awareness is not just kind of like a field of vision and we're just aware of what's going on and we don't do anything. But it's actually like a protective, like a creative, like an active awareness. So not only are we aware of what is going on, but in a way what is going on and what does it create in the mind body complex inside and outside. So in a way it's kind of trying to be aware of what do I think? How do I think? And is this leading to suffering or not? Because this is in a way I think we have to see this mindfulness within the context. context is of suffering and trying to dissipate suffering, trying to create less suffering, trying to cultivate more harmlessness, more compassion. So in a way it's kind of seeing what is happening, how is it happening, and what is the influence, what is the column. And so it's back to this impact. You know, as we were talking about this morning, this contact. Through the senses, you come into contact. And you try to, in a way, be aware of the impact of that contact. If I hear a sound, if I see somebody, if I say something, whatever it is, how does it feel? What does it trigger? Well, I think a lot of the suffering is produced by triggering. Things trigger us. A lot of the time we are quite friendly and happy and whatever. And then if we are unhappy, if we are in pain, if we are creating suffering for others, to kind of look, what happened? What was the contact? How did it impact me? And I think that's why, in a way, it's important to look, like this mindfulness, in a way it's mindful of the condition. As the Buddha says, I'm aware of the feeling as it arrives, as it stays, as it disappears. So it's kind of like we're not fighting with the feeling or the thought or whatever, but we're trying to understand how they arrive. And that's one thing. How does something arrive? What is the trigger? How do I feel? And from that contact, what do I do? Often if you have difficulty with some people, you might think, that's what I used to think when I used to live in a community in England many years ago. And then I would get into trouble with some people. And then I would think, if I had not been in that corridor at that precise moment, I would not have met that person, she would not have said that, I would not have said that, and things would be fine. But there had been the contact, and then from that contact, then both spinning and going into kind of negative relationships, so to speak. So there is a contact, something happened, and it triggers something within us. And in a way, how do we meet that contact? So in a way to look, for example, what I would call like nearly the negative spiral. I think often we have like negative spiraling. You know, we are okay, contact, trigger, contributing factor, and then we go into this negative spiral where we are terrible or everybody is terrible or etc., etc. It kind of amplifies. An example is you are waiting. You are waiting for somebody. 9 o'clock, he or she is not here. 9:10, he or she does not love me. 9:20, nobody loves me. 9:30, I hate the world. But we can go like that, you know? And when does it start? When does it start? It starts from the fact that you're waiting for somebody at a certain time. And the person is not there. That's a contact. The person is not there. So either I go into the spiral, identify negatively with the condition, or with mindfulness, what I would call creative mindfulness, I question. I am active. And I think, the person is not there. Instead of, what does it mean? What happened? One can think, what? Then I phoned the friend and she said, I thought it was next week, same time, or whatever. So in a way, instead of what does it mean in terms of me, personally nowadays I think much more, what happened? If somebody is driving very slowly in front of me, I don't think they do it on purpose, so I'm going to be late. But I think, what is happening to them? Are they looking for something? Are they a problem with their car? So you know, it's kind of like you're mindful of the contact. And then I think the mindfulness helps you to be more creative, to go into a more questioning, what I would call creative questioning. So we are not just observing, but I think there is this kind of reflective element, where there is this kind of idea of is it beneficial or not? Is it helpful or not? Because after the contact, where do I go? This is a, in a way, what is my direction? I think a lot of the Buddha, what the Buddha is teaching is about which direction do we choose to take? Sometimes we go on so much automatism that we have not, we can't choose the direction we take. But I think, in a way, the mindfulness is giving us some space so that then we can choose more the direction we're going to go, which might be more toward wisdom, toward compassion. So in a way, one could say that in mindfulness, there is more like a restful element of just being with in the present, in this non-judgmental quality. But there is also an active quality, which is kind of looking, again, there are that two elements, I would say, of the concentration with the calmness, the restfulness, and that other element of kind of looking it, of reflecting, of questioning. Now I'd like also to talk a little about the different qualities that I've talked about in the suttas, in the about that mindfulness. One of the qualities of the mindfulness is that it's not wobbly. But actually when we're mindful, it does not destabilize us. Because sometimes when we're obsessed with something, we are very mindful of it. But it has a disturbing quality. So here, the mindfulness we talk about is not wobbly, it's not floating either, because sometimes we feel vague. We kind of like, you know, sometimes you wake up and you feel, ooh, really vague. So the mindfulness brings this kind of bright element, and there is some brightness. Then, of course, there is the idea of recollection, remembering the intention, and that, as I said, is very much the process of coming back. Another element is absence of confusion, that the mindfulness orients us in time and place. That actually, because we are more present, you see, this is a thing. Imagine yourself. You're sitting on your sofa, and you're totally spinning into some daydream, and you know, and so off you go into your daydream. And suddenly somebody calls you, come, help me. And generally it's kind of like, you will have to come back from being somewhere so far away, to come back here and then to address the person calling you. And so in a way the mindfulness means that we're not vague, we're not kind of lost somewhere else. We're really here. And I think by being really here, we can be more creatively responsive because we're not lost. I think often there is this quality of being lost, of being somewhere else, which then makes that we're not totally present to what is going on. And sometimes you think, what? You know, like you people, when you're vague, you have this, you don't really know where you are here. Where with the mindfulness, you really know where you are. You really know what's going on. So there is this clarity, this presentness to what is happening. Then the third one is that we engage the object in the experience. And personally, I think it's nearly like a willingness to be with what is going on. I feel at that level, the mindfulness can help us with fear. Because often we are kind of afraid. What if this happens? What if that happens? And so before even something happens, we frighten ourselves. But I think the mindfulness is kind of like giving us some stability and some ground so that we have more faith, we have more confidence in ourselves so that we can meet whatever is happening. And so there is more willingness to engage. Even if it's difficult, we're not afraid before it happens. We're not afraid when it happens. Even if it's difficult, it doesn't mean that it's fun. I'm not saying that mindfulness will make everything fun. Oh, great, big disaster, let's get and do something about it. Not. But I think it will dissolve partly the fear, which I think is one of the obstacles to engaging. Then part of the mindfulness also is there is a part of ethical discernment. And I think that's why I mentioned meditative mindfulness. Because, you see, you could kill somebody very mindful, but personally I don't think it would be right mindfulness. So I think we have to be careful that the mindfulness is not neutral. In terms of the mindfulness we talk in Buddhist meditation, it has an ethical quality. It has a quality which is permeated with wisdom, with compassion, with harmlessness, with generosity. So I think it's very important to see that the mindfulness is not neutral. Of course, we can develop. I mean, that's why a lot of the mindfulness can be used, you know, to be kind of, you know, really right here, right now, you know, and take advantage of people in the business world. I'm sure we can use it that way. But I think that's not our, I mean, that would not be my intention. And I don't think that was the intention of the Buddha. The mindfulness he's talking about is really permeated with this ethical discernment. This ethical discernment which is based on harmlessness, which is based on compassion. And another part of it, of this mindfulness, is what I would call the wholesome stability. And I think to me, I know sometimes you sit in meditation or you do walking meditation, and again, if you check, you could say nothing is happening. And I would totally agree. Most of the time, nothing happens. And it just seems a bit, you know, good old me. Few thoughts, few feelings, few sensations, the world around me. But actually, I think by cultivating, by just sitting still for 30 minutes, or walking back and forth for 30 minutes, actually you are developing stability. You are developing what I would nearly call inner stability in this organism that we are. And that actually can become a refuge. So mindfulness as having this kind of anchoring effect. We kind of anchor within our being. Instead of kind of being afraid of ourselves or over kind of elated about ourselves, it's kind of coming back to this very human element of I am alive, I have a potential, and to have, in a way, faith in it, to have a kind of a ground within ourselves, so that, in a way, we become a refuge for ourselves. And to me, again, this is, again, with the dissolution of fear, just to feel grounded. And I think when you sit in meditation, when you do walking meditation, you are building that groundedness, you are building that stability. Even though it doesn't seem kind of very apparent. Then there is this idea of exploratory, probing quality, that the mindfulness is not just like a mirror reflecting things, but that again this idea of engaging. You engage with what is going on. Then I wanted to mention a few simile. In the sutta, in the text, they give you a lot of simile for this mindfulness. So they give you different examples. And they say developing mindfulness is a bit like being a charioteer. Somebody, you know, kind of somebody who has a car with horses. So if you're on a cart with horses, generally you're above the ground. And so there is two things there. The charioteer has to be careful with the horses, otherwise the horses just run away and then there is an accident. But also the charioteer sees widely. And there is a lot of this idea with mindfulness that you see more than you can see normally. Because you are not so caught, again back to, you're not just caught in one element. But you see the one element within, more of the elements in the experience. So the other example is that it's like being up a tower. Again, this gaining perspective. And I think mindfulness can help us there, as in the cough, when the person mentioned the coughing. And then having that kind of perspective, but I cough, and nobody died of it. So instead of being caught, oh, I am going to be ill now, there is a perspective. And I think, you know, again, there is this openness, so we can have a perspective. Then there is, like, it's like a cow herd watching his cow. It can't be, the cowherd is not like, you know, if he has a whole day with the cows, he's not going, he has a kind of, let's say, 20 cows. He's not going to run every 2 minutes after each cow, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But often that's what we do. That's what we do in meditation. Oh, I must not think this. Oh, I must not do this. Oh. So you cannot make yourself more tense. No, the cowherd needs to be a little afar, but keep an eye. Kind of a spacious eye, so that he see all the cows together, and then can also notice the diverse element if one of them goes too far. Again, that idea of spaciousness, and then being able to notice the elements within that. So that alertness, then it's like a gatekeeper, so that it protects you from danger. So I think in mindfulness, really, kind of a time, I would nearly say protect us from ourselves. Protect us from what I would call the spiraling. You have the contact, there is a trigger, and then you know. And then you can have the question, do I want to go there? Do I want to do this again? Do I want to get upset in the same way? Or can I do something else? I think there is that element of protection. Then there is this medical idea of this kind of like probing, investigating, delineating what is the illness, how is it? It's kind of looking at the diverse element. Many years ago, I taught a retreat, and there was a person who had some difficulty, so I saw the person every day. And that person had a lot of difficulty, was quite a big problem. And so every day she would just tell me part of the problem. And what was interesting for me, that every day it was different. Because every day the person could look at a different aspect. So one time it was like this, next day it was like that, next day it was like that. And I felt by the end of it, the problem was really looked in every direction. And then from that, not to make a decision from considering all the elements, but now that you know everything, let it rest. And then generally out of ourselves comes this creative response. Because often what we do is we think too much about something. We think. But here, we consider all the elements, but in a spacious way. So we can live it. We can take it again. We can live it. We can take it again. In the same way that if you have a wound, you want to examine it. You want to clean it. But you don't want to, every 2 minutes, kind of, you know, do something with it. It becomes infected. But yes, at the beginning, you want to really examine it. But then you have to live it. And then the last example is a plowman. That actually the mindfulness is like a plowman which is tilling the land, just with the cows. And that actually, first, the plowman has to have the right direction. You know, because if he kind of goes like that with the cows, he's not going to kind of till the land and plant the seed in the proper way. So having a clear direction. Then also, the plowman must apply pressure in the right way. Because if he pushes plow too much, it won't work. If it's too hard, if it doesn't apply enough, it won't go anywhere, not useful. So the right pressure. And also by digging, you reveal something. And I think we do the same with the mindfulness, that we start to be clearer about the direction, about the intention. Also, there is more balance. Because often what we have, I feel, is that either we are too intense, or either we don't do anything. You know, we've got a problem, I must resolve it, totally, immediately. And then you just think about this, and then it's it more intertwined. Or you think, it's too much, I can't do anything, I give up. And then each doesn't really help. And so in a way, the middle way, how can I be with this? Examine it, work with it, but not be overtaken by it, overwhelmed by it. So that I am there, but there is space. So in a way, that's what I feel that what we do in meditation and when we develop mindfulness is that actually we develop a creative awareness so that we can have a creative response and that we can bring that to our daily life. And I would say the aspect of this creative awareness, mindfulness, is acceptance and transformation. That at one level, it helps us to see more clearly what is going on. But I think it's very important to see the mindfulness is not there to make us see clearly only what is negative. Because often there is this idea that, you know, if I cultivate mindfulness, awareness, and I must see what is bad, what is difficult, what is the problem. But I think equally, this is very important, the mindfulness, in a way, will reveal to us, like the plowman, our goodness. I think it is as important to be aware as what is problematic with us than what is good with us, what is positive with us. So in a way, I feel that over time you really realize, oh yeah, I can do this. Oh yeah, I can be compassionate, I can be wise, I can be clear, I can be creative. So there is an awareness of it. I think this is very important. Because the more we are aware of it, the more we can do it, and the more it will develop. That's what I realized with writing. At school, I was terrible at writing. I was really always got bad marks. And then, after being in Korea as a nun, meditating for a little while, and translating the talk of the teacher, Master Puzan, somebody suggested, oh, why don't you write a book out of all these talks? And with a friend, we thought, why not? Let's do it. So we do it. And then the book appeared. And then somebody else later on said to me, oh, you know about Buddhism, I know about ecology, let's write a book about Buddhism and ecology. And I thought, why not? But if I thought, I cannot write, I've never been able to write, then I would have said, oh, I can't do it. But actually, I said, why not? Let's try it. Let's see what happens. And then we did that. And then somebody else asked me to write something else, and off. Now I have 7 books. And the thing is that the writing itself is very creative. And that's what I realized, is that when we open to our opportunity, to our capacity, as we activate them, they become more developed, and they can be more of it. And that's why the mindfulness can be so useful there. Then there is also accepting what is problematic, accepting what is difficult, but not as a way to condemn us, to judge us, but as a way to understand it. How is it difficult? How does it happen? Because then if we bring the impermanence, we're not always on top. We're not always able to activate our good capacity. And in the same way, we're not always terrible people. We're not always angry, upset, or whatever. So it's back to the condition. I think to me the mindfulness makes us realize and really understand condition. To see more clearly inner conditions meeting outer conditions. And again, we have to be careful. It doesn't mean that it's kind of like magic. We're going to be aware of all the conditions at any given moment and we can solve everything. But more that it's an exploration of all these conditions which interact. And that some of the time we can predict and some of the time we have no idea. So it's kind of like working with the condition. And so in a way to become interested, I would say in our difficult habits, that I don't always have them. So when do they happen? What triggers them? What are the contributing factors? And then to creatively engage. Because we can only creatively engage and transform anything if we don't know it. And to me, the mindfulness is again this revealing quality. We probe and it's revealed. And then from that revealing of what is going on, we can work with it. I used to be very irritated easily. And I thought it was other people's fault. It was not my fault if I was irritated. Somebody must be irritating. So I was always looking for somebody, you know, to find trouble with. Until I realized, but why am I irritated really? When am I irritated? What happened? And I saw it was when I was tired. And then I became more aware of the tiredness itself before the irritation. And then I became more conscious, mindful of the feeling in the body of that tiredness. And after that, whenever I felt that feeling of tiredness, if I could, I would go and rest for at least 30 minutes. And then I was a much nicer person. And that was fairly easy. But I had first to notice and not be kind of caught in the result of it, but looking at what are the conditions. What is a trigger? What is a contributing factor? And then creatively engaging with the situation. So in a way, I feel that then what we do when we develop this mindfulness, this creative awareness, that then it's something we take into our daily life. We take in nature. This is something I really took to notice. This is interesting. When you walk in nature, you go to walk in a park, you go in the botanical garden, it's very nice at the moment. And you go and walk there. So you go into the botanical garden, you need to be, you know, with the trees, the plants, and you walk around. And there are lots of daffodils at the moment, very beautiful. And notice, especially when you see the daffodils. You see the daffodils. Look at the color, the shape. And then you think of something else. You think of the office, or you think of dinner, or you think of whatever you think about. And then notice you actually don't really see the daffodil. They're there, but you're not there with them. And then you turn again to the daffodil. Like although you're in the same position, this time you really look at them. And as you look at them with full mindfulness, then they're more yellow. And you think, this is magic. Mindfulness is magic. You know, it's more yellow. It's not more yellow. You are more present to the yellow. Because generally there is this cream. So we see things which are more pale, which are less bright because of that. Because we're not really there. It's the same with listening. I mean, with listening, you know, this is a really good kind of experiment in mindfulness. You listen to somebody in conversation. You look in the right direction, and they speak to you. And you think of something totally other, shopping list, whatever. And then they say, what do you think? And you have no idea what they say. No idea whatsoever. I mean, your ear works. They said something. And actually, there was a contact. But you were not present to the contact. So you really have no idea what they said. And this is really an interesting moment of unconsciousness, you could say. Although you were conscious at the moment, but you were conscious of something else. Because you were conscious of your thought, you were caught in your thought. And it's interesting to notice in our daily life, just to play with this mindfulness, to see when I am mindful, how does it feel? To in a way check. I mean, I told you different things about the mindfulness. And for you to check, is this true or not? If I am mindful in this way, does it make a difference? And if I am not mindful, how does it feel? And to really play with it, to see, when I am mindful, how does it feel? When I am not, how does it feel? So kind of to play, because there are, in a way, different gradation, I would say, of this mindfulness. Sometimes we can be really there, really there. And sometimes it's kind of like half-half. We are half there, and we see ourselves back and forth. You're listening to somebody, and you're trying to be there, and then you see, ooh, no, I'm back there. Very interesting, trying to be here or not here. And so, in a way, and it's the same when you listen to a concert. You know, generally you go to a concert to listen to the music. You know, so you go there, you try to listen, and then you feel yourself falling asleep. Ooh, no, I'm trying to be here. Or you can become distracted. But I paid 60 pounds. I must listen. I must be there. It's very interesting, you know. Especially if it's a very expensive concert. All the time, you know, you're not there. Lost. All that money gone. So, you know, just to pay, you see, with this mindfulness. How is it? What does it bring? To me, it brings this kind of like creative, exploratory, spacious quality, kind of a lightness quality. That if you're aware, it has this lightness quality. But it doesn't mean that it is fun. I think this is important. I discovered that when I was in a train with a friend. It was a long train journey, and I was very aware, very mindful. But it was not fun. It was not terrible either. But I would have said it was neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It was, I would say, awareness of neutral, which was interesting by itself. So that's what I wanted to say to you. So now there is 20 minutes.